air tanks. If the recycler hasn't been damaged, the air could last for months, even a year or more. I'd starve before I asphyxiate it. But what would be the point? I'm drifting, too low on propellant to reach a tanker or any other help. Leaning forward slightly, so he could check the control displays through his suit helmet, he saw that the ship's power generator was unscathed. He would have enough electrical power to keep his systems going. He could even patch the HAB module's hull, bring the air pressure back to normal, and get out of the suit. To what avail? To drift helplessly through the belt until I starve. You could call the nearest tanker and ask for a retrieval, he told himself. The computer has their positions in its memory, and you could contact them with a tight-beam laser signal. Would they come to my rescue? Not before they checked with HSS headquarters. Grigor will not be happy to learn that I failed to eliminate star power. By now, Fuchs and his friends are probably screaming their heads off to the IAA. Would Grigor tell them to rescue me? Or would he decide that it's better if I just quietly die? Quietly. Harbin smiled. That's the key. Do not go gentle into that good night. He quoted silently. Rage. Rage against the dying of the light. On a clear channel, he put through a call to Grigor.
George awoke to see Fuchs and Nodon staring down at him, Fuchs looking grim, irritated. Nodon was wide-eyed with fright. Strange to see him with those fierce carvings in his face looking so scared, George thought. So, I'm not in heaven, then, he said, trying to grin. His voice sounded strained, terribly weak. Not yet, Fuchs growled. He realized he was lying in one of Star Power's privacy cubicles, his spacesuit removed. Either they've got me tied down, or I'm so fucking feeble I can't move. What happened? He asked. Nodon glanced at Fuchs, then licked his lips and said, The laser blast shattered our laser. The mirror assembly broke loose and took off your arm. He said the last words all in a rush, as if ashamed of them. George looked down, surprised at how much effort it took to twist his head, and saw his left arm ended just short of the elbow. The stump was swathed in plastic spray bandage. He felt more fuddled than shocked, just the barest tendril of pain, now that he thought about it. Not scared, no worries. Ah, oh, I must have doped me up pretty good. The rest of your arm is in the freezer, Fuchs said. We are heading back to Ceres at high thrust. I will alert Chris Cardenas. George closed his eyes and remembered seeing the space-suited arm spiraling out the cargo hatch. He looked at Nodon. You shut off the bleeding, eh? The younger man bobbed his head up and down. And closed off the suit arm, George added. Fuchs said, He also went out EVA and recovered your arm. I thought for a few minutes that we would lose him altogether. Did you now? George said, feeling stupid, muffled. Thanks, mate. Nodon looked embarrassed. He changed the subject. You must have hit the other ship a damaging blow. It left at high speed. That's good. We'll be in Ceres in another 14 hours, said Fuchs. That's good. George couldn't think of anything else to say. Somewhere in a deep recess of his mind he knew that he should be screaming. Prosthetics be damned. I've lost me fucking arm. But the drugs muted his emotional pain as well as the physical. Nothing really seemed to matter. All George wanted was for them to leave him alone and let him sleep. Fuchs seemed to understand, thank God. You rest now, he said. His tight slash of a mouth turned down bitterly. I have a long report to send to the IAA as soon as we can repair one of the antennas.
Not this Fuchs person again, complained Hector Wilcox. Eric Czar and Francesco Tomaselli were sitting in front of Wilcox's desk, Czar looking decidedly uncomfortable, Tomaselli almost quivering with righteous indignation. Wilcox's office was imposing, as befitted the Council General of the International Astronautical Authority. Slim, sleek, impeccably clothed, in a somber, charcoal business suit and dapper pearl-gray tie that nicely set off his silvery hair and trim mustache. Wilcox looked every centimeter the successful administrator, which he believed himself to be. He had arbitrated many a corporate wrangle, directed teams of bureaucrats to generate safety regulations and import duties on space manufacturers. He climbed the slippery slope of the IAA's legal department until he sat at its very top, unchallenged and hailed by his fellow bureaucrats as an example of patience, intelligence, and above all, endurance. Now he had a charge of piracy to deal with, and it unsettled him down to his very core.
"He sent in a complete report," Tomaselli said, lean and eager, his dark eyes flashing.
Czar interrupted. "Fuchs claims his ship was attacked."
"He reports," Tomaselli resumed, laying emphasis on the word, "not only that his own ship was attacked, but another as well, and one of the men seriously injured."
"By a pirate vessel." Czar's ruddy, fleshy face colored deeper than usual. "That's what he claims." "And the evidence?"
"His ship is damaged," Tomaselli said before Czar could open his mouth. "He is bringing the injured man to Ceres."
"Which ships are we talking about?" Wilcox asked, clear distaste showing on his lean, patrician face. Czar put out a hand to silence his underling. "Fuchs's ship is named Star Power. The other ship that he claims was attacked is Waltzing Matilda. Is that one on its way to Ceres, too?"
"No," Tomaselli jumped in. "They had to abandon it. The three of them are coming in on Star Power. Fuchs and the two men from Waltzing Matilda."
Wilcox gave the Italian a sour look. "And Fuchs has charged Humphrey's space systems with piracy." "Yes," said both men simultaneously. Wilcox drummed his fingers on his desktop. He looked out his window at the St. Petersburg waterfront. He wished he were in Geneva, or London, or anywhere except here, in this office with these two louts, and this ridiculous charge of piracy. Piracy. In the 21st century. It was ludicrous. Impossible. Those rock rats out in the asteroid belt have their private feuds, and now they're trying to drag the IAA into it.
"I suppose we'll have to investigate," he said gloomily. "Fuchs has registered a formal charge," said Tomaselli. "He has requested a hearing."
"Which I will have to preside over," Wilcox said to himself. "I'll be a laughingstock, at the very least." "He should arrive at Ceres in a few hours," Czar said. Wilcox looked at the man's unhappy face, then turned his gaze to the eager, impetuous Tomaselli.
"You must go to Ceres," he said,
pointing a long, manicured finger at the Italian. Tomaselli's eyes brightened.
"I will conduct the hearing there."
"No," Wilcox snapped. "You will interview this man Fuchs, and the others with him, and then bring the three of them back here, under IAA custody. Bring two or three peacekeeper troopers with you."
"Peacekeepers?" Czar asked.
Wilcox gave him a wintry smile. "I want to show that the IAA is taking this situation quite seriously. If these men believe they have been attacked by pirates, then they should have some visible protection, don't you agree?"
"Oh, yes, of course,"
Tomaselli said.
"One of the men is seriously injured, and all three of them have been living in low gravity for so long that they could not return to Earth unless they spend several weeks in reconditioning exercises."
Wilcox let a small hiss escape his lips, his only visible sign of displeasure so far. Yet he knew that his control was on the fragile brink of crumbling into towering anger. "Very well, then," he said icily. "Bring them to Cellini."
"I will conduct the hearing there?" Tomaselli asked eagerly.
"No!" Wilcox snapped. "I will conduct the hearing there." Czar looked stunned.
"You'll go to Cellini?"
Drawing himself up on his dignity, Wilcox replied, "I have not risen this far in the service of the International Astronautical Authority by avoiding the difficult tasks." It was a bald-faced lie, but Wilcox almost believed it to be true, and Czar was willing to accept whatever his superior told him.
George could tell from the look on Dr. Cardenas's face that the news was not good. Fuchs and Nodan had rushed him to Ceres' minuscule infirmary as soon as they had landed.